pride in my reports. It was my first assignment at the San Diego field office, and Maddox calling me out in front of everyone had just been poor form. Then I thought about lunch with Val the day before and the warnings she'd given me about Maddox. He will tell you that you're worthless as an agent, even if you're the best of the best, just so he can observe your performance when your confidence has been crushed. I ripped the headphones from my head and gripped the report in my hands. I rushed toward the ASAC's office at the far end of the squad room. I paused upon seeing the stunningly beautiful woman who served as a checkpoint before one could enter Maddox's office suite. The nameplate on her desk read Constance Ashley, a name that suited her, with her white blonde hair falling in soft waves, cascading just a bit over her shoulders, nearly matching her porcelain skin. She peered up at me from under thick lashes, and she practically batted her eyes at me. "Agent Lindy," she said, with just a hint of a southern twang. Constance's rosy cheeks, poise, and down-home disposition were all a ruse. Her steely blue eyes betrayed her. "Miss Ashley," I said, nodding. She offered a sweet smile. "Just Constance."
"Just Lise."
I tried not to sound as impatient as I felt. She was nice, but I was rather anxious to speak with Maddox. She touched the tiny apparatus in her ear and then nodded.
"Agent Lindy, I'm afraid Special Agent Maddox is away from his desk. May I set up an appointment?"
"Where is he?" I asked.
"That's classified," she said, her sweet smile unwavering.
I flicked my badge. "Thankfully, I have top secret clearance." Constance wasn't amused. "I need to speak with him," I said, trying not to beg. "He is expecting my report." She touched the small plastic device again and nodded.
"He'll return after lunch."
"Thank you," I said, turning on my heels and heading back the way I'd come. Instead of retreating to my cubicle, I went into the hall and poked around until I found Val. She was in Agent Marks's office.
"Can I speak with you for a minute?" I asked.
She looked at Marks and then stood.
"Sure."
She shut the door behind her, biting her lip.
"Sorry to interrupt."
She made a face. "He's been chasing me for 6 months. Now that Trax is out of the way, he is under the misapprehension that he has a chance." My face compressed. "Did I transfer to a singles bar?" I shook my head.
"Don't answer that."
"I need a favor."
"Already?"
"Where does Maddox frequent around lunchtime? Does he have a favorite eatery? Does he stay here?"
"The fitness room. He's there every day at this time."
"That's right. You mentioned that. Thanks," I said. She called after me.
"He hates being interrupted. As in, his soul hates being interrupted."
"He hates everything," I grumbled under my breath, pressing the button for the elevator. I went down 2 levels and then took the skywalk to the west offices. The newly built San Diego office was comprised of 3 large buildings, and it would likely be a maze to me for a week or two at least. It was a stroke of luck that Val had shown me the way to the fitness room the day before. The closer I came to the fitness room, the faster I walked. I held my badge against the black square protruding from the wall. After a beep and the sound of the lock opening, I pulled open the door to see Maddox's feet dangling in the air, his face red and glistening with perspiration, while he bobbed quickly on a chin-up bar. He barely acknowledged me, still carrying on with his workout.
"We need to talk," I said,
holding up my report, which was now crinkled from my grip. That made me even angrier. He let go of the bar, his sneakers landing on the floor with a thud. He was breathing hard, and he used the collar of his heather-gray FBI T-shirt to wipe the dripping sweat from his face. The bottom hem pulled up, revealing just a sliver of his perfectly cut lower abs and one side of the V that I had fantasized about at least 12 times since the first time I'd seen it. His answer brought me back to the present.
"Get out."
"This is for all employees of the facility, is it not?"
"Not between 11 and noon.
"Says who?"
"Me."
His jaw flitted under his skin, and then he eyed the papers in my hand.
"Did you rework that FD-302?
"No."
"No?"
"No," I seethed. The transcription and translation are accurate, and the FD-302, like I've said, is thorough.
You're incorrect, he said, glaring down at me.
Behind the irritation was something else, although I couldn't quite decipher it. Can you explain to me what is missing? I asked.
Maddox walked away from me, the fabric under both of his arms and his lower back dark with perspiration.
Excuse me, sir, but I asked you a question.
He flipped around.
You don't come to me asking questions. You take orders, and I told you to modify that report to my satisfaction.
How exactly would you like me to do that, sir?
He laughed once, unamused.
Did your superior do your job for you in Chicago? Because in...
I'm in San Diego, I know.
He narrowed his eyes. Are you insubordinate, Agent Lindy? Is that why you were sent here? To be under my command?
You requested me, remember?
His expression was still one I couldn't read, and it was driving me mad.
I didn't request you, he said. I requested the best language expert we had.
That would be me, sir.
Forgive me, Agent Lindy, but after reading that report, I'm having a hard time believing you're as good as you think you are.
I can't give you intelligence that isn't there.
Maybe you should tell me what you want to hear from that Title III.
Are you suggesting that I'm asking you to lie in your report?
No, sir. I am suggesting you tell me what you expect of me.
I want you to do your job.
I clenched my teeth, trying to keep my Irish side from getting me fired. I would love to accomplish my responsibilities, sir, and do it to your satisfaction. What about my report do you find lacking?
All of it.
That's unhelpful.
Too bad, he said in a smug tone, walking away again.
My patience had run out. How in the hell did you get promoted to ASAC?
He stopped and turned on his heels, leaning down a bit, looking incredulous.
What did you say?
Forgive me, sir, but you heard me.
This is day two for you, Agent Lindy. You think you can...
And it may very well be my last after this, but I'm here to do a job, and you're in my way.
Maddox eyed me for the longest time.
You think you could do better?
You're damn right I could.
Great. You're now the supervisor of Squad 5. Give your report to Constance to digitize and then get your shit in your office.
My eyes danced around the room, trying to process what had just happened. He'd just given me a promotion that I thought would take at least 4 more years.
Maddox walked away from me and pushed through the door to the men's locker room. I was breathing hard, maybe harder than he was after his workout. I turned around, seeing a dozen people standing at the glass door. They stiffened and walked away when they realized they had been caught.
I pulled open the door and walked back down the hall and across the skywalk in a daze. I remembered seeing an empty box next to the Keurig, so I retrieved it and sat it atop my desk, filling it with my laptop, sidearm, and the few files I had in my drawers.
It went that bad, did it?
Val said, genuine concern in her voice. No, I said, still dazed. He promoted me to squad supervisor.
I'm sorry, she chuckled. I thought you said you're the supervisor.
I looked up at her.
I did.
Her eyebrows shot up.
He looks at you with more hate than he does Agent Sawyer, and that's saying something. You're telling me you stood up to him once, and he gave you a promotion?
I looked around the room, trying to think of a plausible reason as well. Val shrugged.
He's lost it. Gone off the deep end.
She pointed at me. If I had known being insubordinate and doing something as taboo as telling another agent how to run a case meant a promotion, I would have told him off a long time ago. I took in a deep breath and picked up the box before walking into the empty supervisor's office. Val followed me in.
This has been empty since Maddox's promotion to ASAC. He's one of the youngest ASACs in the Bureau. Did you know that?
I shook my head as I set the box on my new desk.
If anyone can get away with this, it's Maddox. He's so far up the director's ass that I bet he'll make SAC early, too.
He knows the director? I asked.
Val laughed once. He has dinner with the director. He spent Thanksgiving at the director's house last year. He's the director's favorite. And I don't mean out of the San Diego office or even out of the offices in California. I mean, in the Bureau. Thomas Maddox is the golden boy. He can have whatever he wants, and he knows it. Everyone does.
I made a face.
Doesn't he have a family? Why didn't he go home for Thanksgiving?
Something to do with the ex, or so I hear.
How does rubbing elbows with the director even happen for someone like Maddox? He's got the personality of a badger.
Maybe, but he's loyal to those in his circle, and they're loyal to him. So be careful what you say about him and to whom. You could go from surprise promotion to surprise transfer.
That gave me pause. I'll just, get set up.
Val walked toward the hall, pausing in the doorway.
Drinks tonight?
Again? I thought you said I should stay away from you.
She smiled. Don't listen to me. I am known for giving horrible advice.
I pressed my lips together, trying to suppress a smile.
Even with my monumental fuck-up, maybe it wouldn't be so bad here after all.
Chapter 4
Look who it is, Anthony said, setting a pair of napkins in front of two empty stools.
Thanks for the warning the other night, I said. You could have told me I was leaving with my boss.
Val puffed out a laugh. You let her walk out of here with him? Not even a hint? That's just cruel.
Anthony pulled his mouth to the side.
He wasn't your boss yet. Besides, I knew nothing was going to happen.
I narrowed my eyes.
But you knew he was going to be, and you lost that bet.
Anthony was stunned.
Maddox? Oh no, honey, you must have hallucinated.
Don't look so shocked, I said. It's rude.
It's not that, it's just...
Anthony looked to Val.
I've just seen him shoot so many women down. It was enough of a surprise that he asked you to leave with him.
Val shook her head and chuckled.
I told you, he's sworn off women.
Well, St. Thomas has broken his vow, I said.
Anthony pointed his finger, swirling tiny invisible circles in the air. You must have voodoo in your hoo-hoo,
Val cackled.
Maybe I do, I said, feigning insult. Anthony seemed remorseful in a don't-shoot-me sort of way.
You're right. I should have given you a heads up. First round is on me.
Friends?
That's a start, I said, sitting.
Oh, Anthony said, looking to Val. She's feisty.
Just wait until Maddox finds out you knew she was an agent.
Anthony held his hand to his chest, looking genuinely concerned.
Christ on the cross, you're not going to tell him, are you?
I just might, I said, chewing on my thumbnail.
You'd better have my back from now on.
Swear, Anthony said, holding up three fingers.
Quit that shit. You were never a Boy Scout, Val said.
Hey,
a male voice said before bending down to kiss Val's cheek and sitting in the empty stool next to her.
Hey, Marks, you know Lindy.
Marks leaned forward, took one look at me, and then leaned back.
Yep.
Val made a face.
What's that about?
He was focused on the large television screen above us, and when he didn't answer, she backhanded his arm.
Joel, what's with the douchebaggery?
What the... Why are you hitting me? He said, rubbing his arm.
I just choose to keep my distance from trouble.
I rolled my eyes and looked to Anthony.
The usual? Anthony asked.
I nodded.
You already have a usual? Val said. How often do you come here?
I sighed.
This is just my third time.
In as many days, Anthony added. He set a Manhattan on the napkin in front of me.
Are you going to speak to me this time?
You're lucky I'm speaking to you now, I said.
Anthony nodded, conceding, and then looked to Val.
If she'd ordered only one drink, I still would have remembered.
Whose bar do you think this is?
Val cocked an eyebrow.
This is not your bar, Anthony.
It's my bar, he said, sitting a short tumbler in front of her.
Do you see anyone else running this shit?
He motioned all around him.
Okay.
Val chuckled and Anthony took Marx's order.
I was used to more pleasantries, more courtesy. I liked the sharp wit and jagged edges of their banter. No hurt feelings, no seriousness. After a day at the office, it was refreshing.
The door chimed, and a quick glance turned into a long stare while Maddox made his way to the stool next to Mark's. Maddox's eyes caught mine for a fraction of a second, and then he greeted his friend. Before Maddox could settle into his seat and loosen his tie, Anthony had already set a beer bottle on the counter in front of him.
"Relax," Val whispered. "He won't stay long. Maybe one drink."
"I'm glad I never tried undercover work. I'm beginning to think my thoughts and feelings are surrounded by glass walls and subtitled just in case I'm not obvious enough." Val helped me to carry on a semi-normal conversation, but then Maddox ordered another drink. Val's face compressed.
"That's not like him."
I tried to remember if he'd had more than one drink the first time we met.
"Hell," I whispered, "I should probably head home anyway."
I gestured to Anthony for my check, and Marks leaned forward.
"You leaving?" he asked.
I simply nodded. He seemed miffed by my silence.
"You don't talk now?"
"Just trying to help you stay out of trouble." I signed the small strip of paper for Anthony, leaving behind a tip that covered all three nights, and then I slipped the strap of my purse over my arm. The night air begged me to stroll in a different direction than my condo, but I rounded the corner and crossed the street, climbing the stoop of my building. Once inside, my heels clicked against the tile floor until I stopped in front of the elevator bay. The entrance door opened and closed, and then Maddox slowed to a stop when he saw me.
"Going up?" he asked.
I stared at him with a blank expression, and he looked around as if he were lost, or maybe he couldn't believe he'd said something so stupid.
We were on the ground floor.
The doors slid open with a cheerful chime, and I stepped inside. Maddox followed. I pressed the buttons for the fifth and sixth floors, unable to forget that Maddox lived directly above me.
"Thank you," he said.
I thought I caught his attempt to soften his gruff, "I'm the boss" voice. While the elevator climbed five floors, the tension swirled around my supervisor and me, increasing just like the illuminated numbers above the door. Finally, as my floor came into view, I stepped out and let out the breath I'd been holding. I turned to nod to Maddox, and just before the doors slid closed, he stepped out. As soon as his feet hit the fifth floor carpet, he seemed to regret it.
"Isn't your place
the next floor up?"
"Yes," he said.
He looked over at my door and swallowed. Upon seeing the scuffed blue paint on my door, I wondered if the memories came as fast and hard for him as they did for me.
"Lise."
He paused, seeming to choose his words carefully. He sighed.
"I owe you an apology for the first night we met. If I had known, if I had done my job and thoroughly reviewed your file, neither of us would be in this position."
"I'm a big girl, Maddox. I can shoulder the responsibility just as well as you can."
"I didn't give you the promotion because of that night."
"I certainly hope not."
"You know as well as I do that your report was exceptional, and you have a bigger set of balls than most of the men in our unit. No one has stood up to me the way you have. I need an agent like that as supervisor."
"You questioned me in front of everyone just to see if I would stand up to you?" I asked, both incensed and dubious.
He thought about that, and then he put his hands in his pockets and shrugged.
"Yeah."
"You're an asshole."
"I know."
My gaze involuntarily fell to his lips. I was lost for a moment in the memories and how amazing it had felt when he'd held me.
"Now that we've established that, I think we got off on the wrong foot.
We don't have to be enemies. We work together, and I think it's in the best interest of the squad to be cordial."
"I think, given our history, trying to be friends would be a particularly bad idea."
"Not friends," I said quickly. "A mutual respect. As colleagues."
"Colleagues," he deadpanned.
"Professionals," I said. "Don't you agree?"
"Agent Lindy, I just wanted to clarify that what happened between us was a mistake, and although it was quite possibly one of the best nights I've had since being back in San Diego, we can't make that mistake again."
"I'm aware," I said simply. I was trying very hard to ignore his remark about what a great night it was because it had been great, more than great, and I would never have it again.
Thank you, he said, relieved. I wasn't looking forward to this conversation.
I looked everywhere but at Maddox, and then pulled my keys from my purse. Have a good night, sir.
Just, Maddox is fine when we're not at the office. Or, Tom, Maddox is fine.
Good night, I said, pushing the key into the knob and twisting it. As I closed the door, I saw Maddox turn for the stairs with an angry expression. My couch was being held hostage, surrounded by cardboard. The white walls with no drapes felt uncomfortably cold, even with the mild temperature outside. I went straight to the bedroom and fell onto my back, staring up at the ceiling. The next day would be long, organizing my office and figuring out where we were on the Vegas case. I would have to develop my own system for tracking everyone's progress, nailing down where they were in their current assignments and what they would be working on next. This was my first assignment as supervisor, and I was working under an ASAC who expected perfection. I huffed. In the corner, the ceiling had a small water stain, and I wondered if Maddox had once let his tub run over, or if there was just a leak somewhere in the walls. A faint knock filtered through the drywall that separated our condos. He was up there, probably getting in the shower, which meant he was getting undressed. Damn it. I had known him as something other than my boss, and now it was hard not to remember the intoxicating man I'd met at the bar, the man who belonged to the pair of lips I'd lamented before he'd even left my bed. Anger and hate were the only ways I was going to get through my time in San Diego. I would have to learn to hate Thomas Maddox, and I had a feeling he wasn't going to make that hard for me. The shelves were empty but dust-free. A space bigger than I could ever hope to fill. The office of the supervisor was everything I had strived for, and at the same time, the next step felt like just another broken rung on my climb up the bureau's ladder. What might look to the average person like a mess of photos, maps, and Xerox copies was my way of keeping straight what agent was assigned to which task, which leads were promising, and which person of interest was more interesting than others. One name in particular caught my eye and came up over and over again, a washed-up poker legend by the name of Abernathy. His daughter, Abby, was also in a few black-and-white surveillance photos, although I hadn't gotten to the reports on her involvement yet. Val came in and watched in awe as I tacked the final pin into the last frayed edge of red yarn.
"Whoa, Lise, how long have you been at this?"
"All morning," I said, admiring my masterpiece while climbing down off my chair. I put my hands on my hips and puffed. "Fantastic, isn't it?" Val took a deep breath, seeming overwhelmed. Someone knocked on the door. I turned to see Agent Sawyer leaning against the doorway.
"Morning, Lindy. I had a few things I'd like to discuss with you, if you're not busy."
Sawyer didn't look like the creep Val had made him out to be. His hair was freshly trimmed, long enough to run his fingers through, but still professional. Maybe he used a bit too much hairspray, but the James Dean quiff flattered him. His square jaw and straight white teeth set off his bright blue eyes. He was kind of beautiful, but something behind his eyes was ugly. Val made a face.
"I'll let the janitor know you have trash in your office," she said, shouldering past him.
"I'm Agent Sawyer," he said, taking the few steps to shake my hand. "I meant to introduce myself yesterday, but I got caught at the courthouse. Late day." I walked behind my desk and attempted to organize the stacks of papers and files.
"I know. How can I help you, Sawyer?"
Sawyer sat in one of the twin tufted leather club chairs set in front of my large oak desk.
"Have a seat," I said, making a show of gesturing toward the seat he'd sat in.
"I planned on it," he said. Slow, and without looking away from the pair of ocean blue eyes across from me, I lowered myself into my oversized office chair, the tall back making me feel like I was sitting in a throne. My throne. And this joker was trying to piss in my court. I stared him down like he was a mangy dog. Sawyer placed a file on my desk and opened it, pointing to a paragraph highlighted in bright orange. "I've previously brought this up before to Maddox, but now that we have a pair of fresh eyes..." Maddox stomped into my office. Sawyer stood up like he'd been shot at.
"Morning, sir."
Maddox simply nodded toward the door, and Sawyer scurried off without a word. Maddox slammed the door shut, and the glass wall shuddered, so I didn't have to. I leaned back into my throne and crossed my arms, both anticipating and hoping for a dick comment to come out of his perfect mouth. "How do you like your office?" he asked. "Excuse me?" "Your office," he said, pacing and throwing his hand out at the empty shelves. "Is it to your satisfaction?" "Yes." Maddox's eyes targeted me. "Is that a question?" "No. The office is satisfactory, sir."
"Good. If you need anything, let me know."
And he pointed to the glass wall.
"If that slimy piece of shit bothers you, you come directly to me, understand?"
"I am capable of handling Sawyer, sir."
"The moment," he seethed, "he makes a snide remark, questions your authority, or makes a pass at you, you come straight to my office."
"Makes a pass at me? Who does he think he's fooling?" "Why did you assign him to this case if you dislike him so much?"
"He's good at what he does."
"Yet you don't listen to him." He rubbed his eyes with his thumb and forefinger, frustrated.
"Just because I have to put up with his bullshit to use his talent doesn't mean you have to.
Do I seem weak to you?" His brows pulled in.
"Pardon?
Are you trying to undermine me?" I sat up.
"Is that what your game is?"
"I've been trying to figure all of this out.
I guess it would look much better to make me seem whiny and incompetent than for you to just run me out on the rails." "What? No," he said, looking genuinely confused.
"I can handle Sawyer. I can handle my newly appointed position. I am capable of running this squad."
"Is there anything else, sir?"
Maddox realized his mouth was hanging open, and he snapped it shut.
"That will be all, Agent Lindy."
"Fantastic. I have work to do." Maddox opened the door, slipped both of his hands into his pants pockets, nodded, and then left, walking toward the security door. I looked up at the clock and knew exactly where he was headed. Val scampered in, eyes wide.
"Holy shit, what was that?"
"I have no idea, but I'm going to find out."
"He was in a hurry to leave the pub last night. Did he walk you home?"
"No," I said, standing up.
"Lie."
I ignored her. "I need to burn off some steam. Care to join me?"
"The fitness room during the ASAX time? Hell no. You shouldn't push him, Lise.
I get that you two have some weird competition going on, but he is famous for his temper." I picked up my gym bag off the floor and jerked it over my shoulder. "If he wants me to push back, I'll push."
"To where? Over the edge?"
I thought about that for a moment. "He just came in here all pissy about Sawyer." Val shrugged.
"Sawyer is a jackass. He makes everyone pissy."
"No, I got the distinct feeling Maddox was..." I realize how this sounds, but he was behaving like a jealous ex-boyfriend. "If that's not it, then I think he gave me this promotion to make me look incompetent. It falls in line with what you've said about him before and what he did to me before I got the promotion." Val reached into her pocket and opened a small bag of pretzels. She held one to her mouth and chewed on it in small bites like a chipmunk.
"I'm leaning more toward your theory that Maddox is jealous, but that's impossible. First of all, he would never be jealous of Sawyer."
Her face twisted.
"Second, he just isn't wired that way anymore. Not since that girl made him hate anything with a vagina."
I wanted to remind her that he hadn't slept with anyone before me either, but that would imply that I wanted him to be jealous, and I didn't.
"What makes you think it was her fault?" I asked.
That made her pause.
"He was in love with that girl. Have you been in his office?"
I shook my head.
"Those empty shelves used to hold several frames with pictures of her. Everyone knew how much he struggled to do the job and love her the way he thought she deserved. Now no one talks about it, not because he did something wrong, but because she broke his heart. And no one wants to make him more miserable than he already is."
I ignored her. "I'm an intelligence analyst, Val. It's in my nature to piece together bits of information and form a theory."
Her nose wrinkled. "What does that have to do with anything? I'm trying to argue the point that he's not jealous of Sawyer."
"I never said he was."
"But you want him to be."
Val was confident she was right. It was maddening. "I want to know if I'm right about him. I want to know if he's trying to sink me.
I want to peel back that top layer and see what's underneath.
Nothing you'll like.
We'll see, I said, walking past her toward the door.
Chapter 5 Maddox stopped midway in an inverted sit-up and sighed.
You're joking.
Nope, I said, heading straight for the women's locker room. He let his back fall flat against the bench he was sitting on, his legs bent and his feet firmly planted on the floor.
Do you want us to hate each other? He said, looking at the ceiling. I'm getting the feeling that you do.
You're not far off, I said, pushing through the swinging door. After removing my workout clothes from my small duffel bag, I shimmied my navy pencil skirt over my hips and unbuttoned my light blue blouse, and then I switched out my C-cup for a sports bra. It was amazing how one piece of fabric could take me from modest curves to the build of a 12-year-old boy. The room lined with lockers and motivational posters didn't smell like the mildew and dirty sneakers I'd expected. Bleach and fresh paint dominated the air. Maddox was finishing his sit-ups while I made my way to the closest treadmill, my Adidas making squish noises as each foot pressed and lifted from the rubber floor. I stepped up onto the belt of the machine and threaded the bottom of my white FBI T-shirt through the safety clasp.
"Why now?" he said from across the room. "Why do you have to be here during my lunch hour? You can't work out in the mornings or the evenings?"
"Have you seen this room before and after hours? The equipment is full."
"The best time of day to get a full workout without dodging sweaty bodies is at your lunch hour because no one wants to come in here while you're here." "Because I don't let them."
"Are you going to ask me to leave?"
I asked, looking at him over my shoulder. "You mean tell you to leave?"
I shrugged.
"Semantics."
His eyes pored over my tight leggings as he thought about that, and then he left the bench for the double bars before lifting both of his legs nearly chest high. If he worked out like that 5 times a week, it was no wonder he had an 8-pack. Sweat was dripping from his hair, and his entire torso glistened. I pretended not to notice as I pressed the button to start the treadmill. The belt moved smoothly forward, the gears causing a familiar shudder beneath my feet. Placing earbuds in my ears, I used the music to help me forget that Maddox was behind me, perfecting perfection, and increasing the speed and incline of the treadmill helped too. After a few laps, I pulled one earbud out and let it hang down over my shoulder. I turned to look at the wall of mirrors on my left and spoke to Maddox's reflection. "By the way, I'm on to you."
"Oh yeah?" Maddox said, puffing in the background.
"You're damn straight I am."
"What the hell is that supposed to mean?"
"I'm not going to let you do it."
"Do you really think I'm trying to sabotage you?"
He seemed amused.
"Aren't you?" "I already told you, no."
After a short pause, he was standing next to the treadmill, his hand resting on the safety handles.
"I know I made a negative impression on you, Lindy. Admittedly, it wasn't unintentional. But I am motivated to make agents better, not tank their careers."
"Does that include Sawyer?"
"Agent Sawyer has a history in our squad that you know nothing about."
"So, educate me."
"It's not my story to tell."
"That's it?" I smirked.
"I don't get your meaning."
"You're not allowing him to speak to me because of someone else's story?"
Maddox shrugged. "I just like to get in his way."
"Your tantrum in my office after Agent Sawyer left was you getting in his way."
"Right."
Maddox shook his head and then walked away. I started to put my earbud back into my ear, but he appeared at my side once again.
"Why am I the asshole for keeping a fuckstick like Sawyer away from you?"
I pushed a button and the treadmill came to a stop. "I don't need your protection," I puffed. Maddox began to speak, but then he walked away again. This time, he pushed through the door of the men's locker room. After 8 minutes' worth of stewing over his attitude, I hopped off the treadmill and stomped into the men's locker room. Maddox had one hand on the sink, the other holding a toothbrush. His hair was wet, and he was covered only in a towel. He spit, rinsed, and then tapped his toothbrush on the sink.
"Can I help you?"
I shifted my weight. "You might be able to charm the brass all the way up to the director, but I'm on to you. Don't think for a second that I don't see through your bullshit." "I'm not going anywhere,"
so you can stop whatever game you're playing.
He dropped his toothbrush in the sink and walked toward me. I stepped backward, quickening my pace as he did. My back hit the wall, and I gasped.
Maddox slammed his palms against the wall on each side of me, just above my head. He was inches from my face, his skin still dripping from his recent shower.
I promoted you to supervisor, Agent Lindy. What makes you think I want you gone?
I lifted my chin. Your bullshit story about Sawyer doesn't add up.
What do you want me to say? He said.
I could smell the mint on his breath and the body wash on his skin.
I want the truth.
Maddox leaned in, his nose tracing my jaw. My knees nearly gave way as his lips touched my ear.
You can have whatever you want.
He leaned back, his eyes falling to my lips. My breath caught, and I braced myself as he moved closer, closing his eyes. He stopped just short of my mouth.
Say it, he whispered. Say you want me to kiss you.
I reached up with my fingers, sliding them down his rippled abdomen, smearing the beads of water until I touched the top of his towel. Every nerve in my body begged me to say yes.
No.
I pushed past him and walked out the door. I climbed back onto the treadmill, chose the fastest setting, and replaced my earbuds in my ear, changing songs until something screamy began to play. 45 minutes later, breathless and sweating, I slowed my pace, walking with my hands on my hips. After my 5-minute cool-down, I showered and then dressed before pinning my hair into a damp bun. Val was waiting for me on the other side of the skywalk.
How did it go?
She asked, genuinely concerned. I continued to walk toward the elevators, and she kept pace. I tried my best to keep my shoulders and expression relaxed. I ran. It was great.
Lie.
Let it go, Val.
You just ran?
She seemed confused. Yes. How was your lunch?
I brought a sack, PB&J. Did he yell at you?
No.
Try to kick you out?
No.
I don't understand.
I chuckled. What's to understand? He's not an ogre. Actually, at this point, he might think I'm the ogre. We entered the elevator together and I pressed the button for our floor. Val took a step toward me, getting close enough that I leaned back.
But he is an ogre. He's mean and ruthless and yells at people when they walk into the fitness room during his hour, even if it's just to retrieve a left sneaker. I know. I was that agent. He screamed at me, totally lost his shit over me trying to retrieve a fucking forgotten sneaker, she said.
The last few words, slow and emphatic, as if she were standing in front of a snapping audience, sharing her slam poetry.
Maybe he's changed. Since you got here? In 3 days? No.
Her dismissive tone annoyed me. You're being a tad excessive.
Dramatic?
Yes.
That's just how I talk.
Dramatically?
Yes. Stop listening for ways to judge me and hear what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I said. The elevator opened and I stepped into the hall. Val followed me toward the security door.
Joel insisted that I eat my PB&J in his office.
Who's Joel?
Agent Marks. Pay attention. He texted me last night. He said Maddox has been weird. His baby brother is getting married next month. Well, not married, but remarried.
No, that's not right either.
My face compressed.
Renewing their vows, maybe?
Val pointed at me. Yes.
Why are you sharing this with me?
He's going to see, you know, her.
The one who burned him?
Affirmative. The last time he went home and saw her, he came back a new man.
Her nose wrinkled.
Not in a good way. He was broken. It was scary.
Okay.
He's sweating the trip. He told Marks. This is fucking classified. Do you hear me?
I shrugged.
Go. He told Marks that he was kind of glad you transferred here.
I walked into my office and welcomed Val with a small smile, and she breathed past me. As the door fit snugly into the frame, I made a show of making sure it was closed, and then I flipped around, the wood of the door feeling cold and rough, even through my blouse.
Oh my God, Val, what do I do? I hissed, feigning panic. He is kind of glad?
I made the most awful face that I was capable of, and then began to pant. She rolled her eyes and fell into my throne.
Fuck off.
You can't tell me to fuck off while sitting in my chair.
I can if you make fun of me.
Her pants dragged against the dark leather as she leaned forward.
I'm telling you, this is a big deal. This is not like him. He doesn't get glad, not even kind of glad. He hates everything.
Okay, but this is really non-intelligence here, Val. Even if it's atypical, you're pulling the fire alarm for a candle.
She arched one brow. I'm telling you, you just knocked over his candle.
You have better things to do, Val, and so do I.
Drinks tonight?
I have to unpack.
I'll help you, and I'll bring wine.
Deal, I said as she left my office. Sitting in my chair felt comforting. I was hiding in plain sight, my back protected, my body encompassed by the waist-high arms. My fingers clicked against the keyboard as small black dots filled in the white password box on the monitor. The first time I'd logged into the system, I remembered seeing the FBI emblem on the screen and feeling my pulse race. Some things never changed. My inbox was full of messages from every agent on progress, questions, and leads. Constance's name practically leaped off the page, so I clicked it.
Agent Lindy. ASAC Maddox requests a meeting at 1500 to discuss development. Please clear your schedule. Constance.
Shit.
Each minute that passed after that was more agonizing than my earlier walk to the fitness room. 5 minutes till 3, I wrapped up my current task and walked down the hall. Constance's long black lashes fluttered when she noticed me, and she touched her ear. Words slipped through her bright red lips, low and inaudible. She turned a fraction of an inch toward Maddox's door. Her white blonde hair fell behind her shoulder and then bounced back into its soft wave. She seemed to snap back to the present and smiled at me.
Please proceed, Agent Lindy.
I nodded, noting that she never took her eyes off me as I passed her small desk. She wasn't just Maddox's assistant. She was his guard dog, in a tiny blonde package. I took a breath and twisted the brushed nickel knob. Maddox's office was made up of mahogany and lush carpets, but his shelves were bare and pathetic, like mine. Missing family photos and personal trinkets that could lead anyone to believe he had a life outside of the bureau. The walls displayed his favorite memories, including plaques and awards, along with a photo of him shaking hands with the director. Three frames sat on his desk, staggered and facing away from me. It bothered me that I couldn't see what was inside of them. I wondered if they held pictures of her. Maddox was standing in his navy suit, one hand in his pocket, staring out his beautiful corner office view.
Have a seat, Lindy.
I sat. He turned.
I have a dilemma that you might be able to help me with.
100 different statements could have come from his mouth. That wasn't one I'd considered. I'm sorry, sir, what was that?
I had a meeting with the SAC earlier, and he feels you could be a solution to a recent issue, he said,
finally sitting in his chair. The blinds let in the full light of the afternoon sun, creating a glare on the desk's already glossy surface. It was large enough to seat 6 people, and I guessed it would be too heavy for 2 men to lift. I raised my toes to fit snugly beneath the space between the wood and the rug. I let out a breath, feeling anchored enough to keep whatever unexpected thing Maddox was about to drop on me from blowing me away. He tossed a file on the desk and slid it toward me, stopping just short of the edge. As I picked it up and held the thick stack of papers in my hand, I was still too sidetracked by Maddox's previous statement to open it. Special Agent Polanski, the SAC, thinks I'm a solution? I said, suspicious. Either I had seriously underestimated my value, or Maddox was full of shit.
Just read it, he said,
standing up again and walking toward the window. Gauging by his stern expression and stiff posture, he was nervous. I opened the thick cardstock to the first page, and then I continued to look over the numerous FD-302s, surveillance photos, and a list of the dead. One report contained charges and court transcriptions of a college kid named Adam Stockton. He was an organizer of some sort, and he had been sentenced to 10 years in prison. I skimmed over most of it, knowing that wasn't what Maddox wanted me to see.
Several of the photos were shots of a man who looked a bit like Maddox, same height, but with a buzz cut and arms covered in tattoos. There were more with a pretty young girl, early 20s, far more years of wisdom in her eyes than there should be. Some photos were individual shots, but most were of them together. I recognized her as the girl in some of the photos I'd posted on my office wall, Abernathy's daughter. The kid with the buzz cut and Abby were obviously a couple, but the way they held on to one another led me to believe their relationship was new and passionate. If not, they were very much in love. He held a protective stance in almost all the photos, but she stayed at his side, not at all intimidated. I wondered if he even noticed he stood that way when he was with her. They were all students from Eastern State University. Further reading told of a fire that had burned down one of the buildings on campus, killing 132 college kids, at night. Before asking why that many kids would be in the basement of a school building that late, I turned the page to find my answer. A floating fight ring. And the Maddox look-alike was a suspect.
"Jesus Christ! What is this?" I asked.
"Keep reading," he said, his back still turned to me. Almost immediately, two names jumped out at me, Maddox and Abernathy. After a few more pages, it all came together, and I looked up at my boss. "Your brother is married to Abernathy's kid?" Maddox didn't turn around. "You're messing with me." Maddox sighed, finally facing me. "I wish I were. They're renewing their vows at the end of next month in St. Thomas, so the family can attend. Their first wedding was in Vegas almost a year ago." I held up the paper. "Just a few hours after the fire. She's a clever one." Maddox walked slowly over to his desk and sat down again. His inability to sit still was making me even more nervous than he appeared to be.
"What makes you think it was her idea?" he asked.
"He doesn't seem like the type to let his girlfriend save him," I said, recalling his posture in the photos.
Maddox chuckled and looked down. "He's not the type to let anyone save him. Which is why this is going to be particularly hard. Special Agent Polanski insists I need backup, and I have to agree with him."
"Backup for what?"
"I'm going to have to break it to him, after the ceremony."
"That she married him to give him an alibi?"
"No," he said, shaking his head. "Abby might have married my brother for a reason, but that reason is because she loves him." He frowned. "It will destroy him to find out the truth, even if she was trying to save him."
"Do you always do what's best for your brothers?" He looked down at the pictures I couldn't see.
"You have no idea."
He sighed.
"I did what I could after the fire, but as you can see from the list of the dead, a 10-year sentence from Adam isn't going to cut it. Adam was charged with 264 counts of involuntary manslaughter, two for each of the victims."
"How did the district attorney get away with that?" I asked.
"Adam was indicted under two different theories of the crime: criminal negligence, manslaughter, and misdemeanor manslaughter."
I nodded.
"My hands were tied," Maddox continued. "I couldn't help my brother, until I let Polanski in on what made me one of the youngest ASACs in Bureau history. I had an in. He almost didn't believe me. My little brother was dating and is now married to the daughter of a person of investigative interest in one of our bigger cases, Mick Abernathy. I got Polanski, with the director's approval, of course, to waive the charges if Travis agreed to work with us. But cracking this case is going to take longer than his jail sentence might have been."
"He'll be an asset?" I asked.
"No."
"The FBI is recruiting him?" I said, astonished.
"Yes. He just doesn't know it yet."
My face screwed into disgust. "Why tell him at his wedding?"
"I won't tell him on his wedding day. I'll do it the morning after, before I leave. It has to be in person, and I don't know when I'll see him again. I don't go home anymore."
"What if he doesn't agree to it?" Maddox blew out a long breath, wounded at the thought.
"He'll go to prison."
"Where do I come in?" Maddox turned a bit in his chair, his shoulders still tense.
"Just hear me out. It was 100% the SAC's idea. He just happens to be right."
"What?" My mind was racing, and my patience was wearing thin.
I need a date for the wedding. I need someone else from the Bureau to attend and witness the conversation. I don't know how he'll react. A female agent will be a good buffer. Polanski thinks you're the perfect candidate.
Why me? I asked.
He mentioned you by name.
What about Val? What about Constance?
Maddox cringed and then stared at his finger while he tapped it on his desk. He suggested someone who would fit in.
Fit in? I repeated, confused.
Two of my brothers are in love with women who... lack finesse.
I lack finesse? I asked, pointing to the center of my chest. Are you fucking serious?
I craned my neck.
Have you met Val?
See? Maddox said, pointing at me with his whole hand. That is exactly something Abby would say. Or Camille, Trent's girlfriend.
Trent's girlfriend?
My brother.
Your brother Trent.
And Travis, and your Thomas. Who am I missing, Tiger and Toadstool? Maddox wasn't amused. Taylor and Tyler. They're twins. They're between Trent and me.
Why the tease? I had to ask.
But I was beyond annoyed with the entire conversation.
He sighed.
It's a Midwestern thing, I don't know. Lindy, I need you to go to my brother's wedding with me. I need you to help me talk him into not going to prison.
It shouldn't be that hard for you to convince him. The Bureau is a great alternative to prison.
He'll be undercover. He will have to keep it from his wife.
So?
He really, really loves his wife.
So do our other undercover agents, I snapped, not feeling the slightest bit of sympathy.
Travis has a past. His relationship with Abby has always been volatile, and Travis sees honesty as his commitment to their marriage.
Maddox, you're boring me. Our undercover agents simply tell their significant others they can't discuss their job, and that's the end of it. Why can't he just do that?
He can't tell her anything. He'll be undercover on an investigation that could implicate Abby's father. That could certainly become an issue in their marriage. He won't willingly risk anything that could mean losing her.
He'll get used to it. We'll just give him a simple, tight alibi and stick with it.
Maddox shook his head. No part of this is simple, Lise. We'll have to be exceptionally creative to keep Abby from figuring it out.
He sighed and looked up at the ceiling.
She's sharp as a goddamn tack, that one.
I narrowed my eyes at him, wary of the fact that he'd used my first name. The SAC wants me to go. Do you?
It's not a bad idea.
Our being friends is a bad idea, but us posing as a couple for an entire weekend isn't?
Travis is hard to explain.
You think he'll get violent?
I know he will.
I'm assuming you don't want me to shoot him if he does.
Maddox shot me a look.
Then can I shoot you? I asked.
He rolled his eyes and I held up my hands.
I'm just trying to understand my role in all of this.
Travis doesn't do well when he doesn't have choices. If he thinks he could lose Abby over it, he'll fight. Losing her for lying, or losing her because he's in prison, aren't great choices. He might turn down the deal.
He loves her that much?
I don't think that's an adequate word to describe the way he feels about her. Threatening him with losing her is like threatening his life.
That's awfully dramatic.
Maddox considered that. Drama is the nature of their relationship.
Noted.
Trent has organized a surprise bachelor party the night before in my hometown, Eakins, Illinois.
I've heard of it, I said.
When Maddox shot me a confused look, I continued.
I've driven by the exit a few times on my way to and from Chicago.
Maddox nodded. The next day we'll drive to O'Hare International Airport and then fly from there to St. Thomas. I'll have Constance email you the dates and itinerary.
I had mixed feelings about returning home so quickly after leaving.
Okay. Like I've mentioned, we'll be posing as a couple. My family believes I'm in marketing, and I'd like to keep it that way.
They don't know you're an FBI agent?
That's correct.
May I ask why?
No.
I blinked.
Okay.
I assume we'll be sharing a hotel room in Eakins and in St. Thomas.
Correct.
Anything else?
Not at this time.
I stood. Have a good afternoon, sir.
He cleared his throat, obviously surprised at my reaction. Thank you, Agent Lindy. Turning on my heels to leave his office, I was aware of everything. how fast I walked, the way my arms swayed, even how straight my posture was. I didn't want to give him anything. I didn't know myself how I felt about the upcoming trip, and I certainly didn't want him to speculate. When I returned to my office, I shut my door and nearly collapsed into my chair. I crossed my legs at the ankles and hoisted them onto my desk. Agent Sawyer's knuckles tapped on the door, and he expectantly stared at me through the glass wall. I waved him away. Maddox had been glad I transferred to San Diego, and the SAC had thought I lacked finesse, even less than fuck off Val or Agent Davies the slut. I looked down at my crisp, light blue button-down blouse and knee-length skirt. I have motherfucking finesse. Just because I speak my mind means I'm not tactful? My whole face flushed red with anger. I thought the days of women in the Bureau being called breastfeds and split-tails were over. Most male agents making sexist remarks would be quickly shut down by other male agents, even when they weren't aware of my or any other female's presence. Lack finesse? I'm going to lack his finesse all over the fucking squad room. I covered my mouth, even though I hadn't sworn out loud. They might have a point. The landline's shrill ring bleated twice, and I held it to my ear. Lindy?
It's Maddox.
I sat up tall, even though he couldn't see me.
There's one more reason you're a good candidate, one I didn't mention to the SAC.
I'm positively on the edge of my seat, I said, monotone.
We're posing as a couple, and I think you're the only female agent who would be comfortable enough with me to play the part.
I can't imagine why. The line was silent for a solid 10 seconds. I'm kidding. Good to know it's not solely because the SAC thinks I have no class.
Let's get one thing straight. The SAC didn't say that, and neither did I.
You kind of did.
That's not what I meant. I would throat punch someone if he ever said anything like that about you.
Now it was my side of the line that was quiet. Thank you. I didn't know how else to respond.
Be on the lookout for that email from Constance.
Yes, sir.
Good day, Lindy.
I put the phone on its base and returned my ankles to their previous position on my desk, pondering the trip we would take in 7 weeks. I was going to be spending several nights alone with Maddox, posing as his girlfriend. And I wasn't at all upset about it, even though I wished I were. I tried not to smile. I didn't want to smile, so I frowned instead, and it was the biggest lie I'd told since telling Jackson, and myself, that I was happy with him in Chicago. Val lightly knocked on the glass with one knuckle and then tapped her watch. I nodded, and she walked away. I wasn't sure how much Maddox wanted me to share. Keeping the secrets about our first night and my purpose in Squad 5 was hard enough. Unfortunately for me, Val was my only friend in San Diego, and postulation happened to be her superpower. Chapter 6 My fingers knotted in my hair in frustration as I struggled to focus on the words on the screen. I'd been staring at my computer for more than 2 hours, and my vision was beginning to blur. The blinds on the exterior windows were closed, but the sunset had slipped through the slits and then burned out hours before. After studying Travis's case file, I'd spent the rest of the evening looking for ways to get him out of prison time for the fire. But using him as an asset was not just the best idea. It was the only idea. Unluckily for Travis, his brother was so good at his job that the Bureau felt adding another Maddox would only be beneficial. So he wasn't only an asset. He would be recruited. A knock sounded, and Agent Sawyer slipped a file into the metal holder screwed on the front of my door. The holder was there so that agents wouldn't have to bother me with every approval request. But Sawyer opened the door just enough to poke his head into my office, a bright white Cheshire smile on his face. "It's late," he said. "I know," I said, resting my chin on the heel of my hand. I didn't take my eyes from the screen. "It's Friday." "I'm aware," I said. "Have a good weekend." "I thought maybe you'd like to get dinner somewhere. You've got to be starving." Maddox stepped into my office, cool and pleasant to me, and then he glowered at Sawyer. Agent Lindy and I have a meeting in 2 minutes.
A meeting? Sawyer said, chuckling.
Under Maddox's intense stare, his smile faded. He smoothed down